Good morning. The last session of the day, the last breakout session of the day. You know, you guys didn't go home early. This is an honor. We really are excited to be here, and we're really excited to share with you some of the results of what we've been doing over really about 3 years, but over the last year and a half. Our students have had devices, mobile devices in their hands. Our faculty have been working, deploying these devices in the classroom. And we wanted to share with you some of the results, some of the interesting things that we found over the course of this year and a half that we've actively been using mobile devices in the classroom, using them in campus, around campus, doing different types of things. There's a couple of things I wanted to mention. On the back, we have there's an annual report that we did to our faculty. It's available for you on the way out. Be sure to pick one up so you don't have to carry them back on the airplane with us. But it's something that we designed for our faculty to kind of give them an idea. It's going to review a lot of the kinds of information that you see here. I wanted to say that my name is George Salzman. I'm the director of the Adams Center for Teaching and Learning, and I'm going to introduce you to several people who have been working very diligently in this endeavor. We're first going to start with Dr. Kyle Dixon, who is from who's a professor in the English department. He has been doing a lot of work in the teaching learning area. We have Dr. Brad Crisp, who works in who is a faculty member in Management Information Systems, who's been doing a lot of study about how student device selection was incorporated, what are the types of things that our students are doing with those devices in and out of the classroom. And then we're going to introduce you to Dr. Scott Perkins, who has been conducting our mobile learning research, coordinating our mobile learning research, and he's going to present some more of the empirical data that we've been able to gather from the activities that are going on in our endeavor. So let me introduce you just briefly to Abilene Christian University. We're just shy of 5,000 students. We have students that are represented from all 50 states and 60 different countries. It's a very diverse place. We have lots of people who are coming in from a lot of different areas. We're primarily residential. About 50% of our students live on campus. The other 50% come in from off campus. You see the other data about ACU. Just to give you a brief overview, where we got started with this, we were looking at our data, probably the same data that you collect on many of your campuses. What do our students bring with them? What are the types of preferences that they have? What was the percentage of cell phone usage, cell phone ownership? What was the percentage of landline ownership? What was the percentage of laptop ownership versus desktop ownership? We were looking at many of the reports. The Horizon reports that come from EDUCAUSE and the New Media Consortium are absolutely wonderful, really great. We were looking at that. We were looking at how mobility was playing through that. And all of that data was really pointing to the mobility factor was strong. We know students really wanted to be mobile. And we're trying to wonder, how do we engage the information age when we're working in classrooms that were primarily built in an old paradigm, in an old model? And then this happened. I don't know if you remember this, but Steve Jobs goes on stage and he says, we've got an iPhone, we've got an iPod, and we've got an internet communicator. And, you know, the audience didn't quite know what to do with the internet communicator, but at our institution, we were kind of going, I think this is what we want, a way to bring the internet into the classroom, or a way to really engage the information age when we need to with a device that can run all day on a single battery, a device that can be robust enough and access the web in a real rich way. That began a process of visioning. We created lots of documents, many, many documents, worked on lots of vision. We invited faculty to participate. We thought about this as an educational initiative from the beginning. And an interesting thing happened. More than 70% of our faculty attended an interest meeting about mobile learning. I mean, it surprised even us. We kept having to change the venue over and over because so many people were wanting to know about it. Over 50% of them put some sort of research hypothesis together and said that they were interested in researching how mobility affected something in their disciplines. We weren't able to fund all of those. We were expecting a smaller number, but we were able to take 42 of those and put them into a research study that was a pilot before we began the full implementation with our students. And we began something we called the Mobile Learning Fellows Program, where we were going to provide a stipend and materials and resources for faculty that wanted to empirically study how mobile learning was affecting students and the classroom. And we're going to present a lot of that data. Just to give you a brief overview about what's going on campus with the devices, we have just shy of 2,000 devices in the hands of students. We have 240 devices in the hands of our faculty, which represents about 95.6% of our full-time faculty. And we have 201 devices that are in support staff and other people across campus. An interesting thing about how this breaks down, if you look at were they an existing AT&T customer or not, 81% of them would select the iPhone. If they were with another carrier, they were probably locked into some sort of existing contract. They probably had some other plan that they were happy with. They might have been on a family plan that they were bringing with them. And so you see that they would select an iPod Touch. The option that we gave our students was if you want an iPhone, we'll provide it for you, but you'll be responsible for the plan. If you don't want to be responsible for the plan or you're not able to pay for that plan, we'll provide you with an iPod Touch. We have pervasive Wi-Fi, even in the green spaces. We have every part of our campus that we believe students can walk to is lit up with Wi-Fi so that it makes those devices much more equal. But we'll see that as the data progresses, that there are some interesting things that happen between that. Our goals for what we wanted to do with research was we really wanted to empirically evaluate, is this working? Is this thing really worth doing in the long term? Does putting mobility in the hands of students, putting the educational content mobile, really affect the way that teaching and learning happens on our campus? We wanted to serve the mobile learning and educational communities, to be able to share this data with people like you and to be able to work with people like you as we work together to try to understand this. And we wanted to involve our faculty in a way to do research in their disciplines when they look at the niche of how does mobility affect and then fill in the blank of their discipline. And then obviously share this information with others, and we built some things that we can do with to be able to share this more easily and more rapidly, and we'll talk about that at the end of this. So let's begin by talking about some of the research that we found from year one, specifically related to the devices and how students perceive the usage of those devices. And so we're going to have Dr. Brad Crisp talk about the information that he found as part of one of our mobile learning fellows.
Thank you, George. Good morning. Let me apologize for my voice. I hope it will hold up. The weather's done strange things to me. I will also apologize for the my slides are not as beautiful as everyone else's, and part of that is because I'm supposed to be the outsider. I'm supposed to give the outside perspective here. So my job in this picture is to look at what the Mobile Learning Initiative has done from a goals and metrics standpoint. So we wanted to have an opportunity to do a longitudinal program assessment and to also do some research on IT adoption and usage. And so from a metric standpoint, I have a number of self-reported indicators, attitude, impact, and usage. And also wanted to look at it from a number of different dimensions. Overall, how much were they using, or you know, their attitude, or academic specifically, social specifically, entertainment specifically. And then for those of you that are interested in the research side, I'll tell you just a little bit about some of the motivation and impact of device selection and this idea of utilitarian versus hedonic. So when we do things that are task-oriented, we may do them differently than if it's more pleasure-oriented. So here we go. You see here a sense of how many devices we selected. And our first two surveys that we did before, when they picked up their device and in week three of the fall semester, they did it on paper. So we had wonderful response rates, 80%. And then you see what happens when we go electronic. So more traditional response rates in the 15 to 19% perspective. So let me give you a sense of, first of all, about device selection. So this is, I would consider this more of an exploratory model. But the basic idea is the perceived cost, you know, how difficult it is to switch, monthly cost, the device perceptions, you know, the iPhone versus the iPod Touch, which one would be more desirable for me? And then some social influence issues. Would my professors care? Would my parents care which device I should use. And so the idea here is that these three things drive device selection, and there may actually be some impact on some important outcomes based on the device that they chose. So the first look at this is from student comments. There was an open-ended question in a survey when they picked up their device, and it asked, what was the most important factor that helped you decide? And the iPhone recipients tended to focus on things that were related to the perceptions of the device. I want a new phone, specifically the iPhone. They only wanted to carry one device, or they already had an iPod. The touch recipients, on the other hand, tended to focus on things that were related to costs, I would argue. So the iPod is more affordable, they already have another service provider, so they're locked in, or they already have a phone, so there's some degree of switching cost involved. I'm sorry about that. There we go. All right. I'll give you a second to look at that. All right, now, one more look at this. Wanted to also take a quantitative look. So we pulled some indicators from the literature, and once again, looking at perceived costs, device perceptions, and social influence. And so what you see there is perceived cost, the more that they thought it was too expensive, the more likely they were to choose the touch, which wouldn't require a monthly plan. Device perceptions, the more excited they were about the device, its usefulness, its ease of use, its enjoyment, the more likely they were to choose the iPhone. And then social influence. And here the point is, the only thing that mattered was parents. It didn't matter so much what your friends or your professors thought. And here my interpretation of that is not so much that the parents were an advocate for the iPhone, but probably there were a good deal of parents that were saying, we don't want you to do that, we want you to choose the touch instead, probably for cost reasons. All right, so overall I would say why did they choose the device that they chose? I think there's pretty strong evidence for the cost perspective and for the relative device perceptions, and then some evidence for the social influences. All right, so then I wanna move into, okay, so what difference does this make on outcomes that are important to the students? And so where I will start is a sense of their general attitude, not device specific, but for everyone involved. And so you'll notice that the perceptions are very very positive. 95% had a positive reaction to the iPhone initiative, and why wouldn't you? You're getting a new device, there's a lot to be excited about. The question then is, where does it go from there? And the good news for our students is that there was a little bit of a drop, but it stayed around that 90% level, had a positive perception of the iPhone initiative. So then what happened by device? So you'll see at the beginning, the attitude was pretty close. iPhone and iPod touch users were pretty similar. And then over time, there did seem to be a gap that formed between the iPhone and the iPod touch users that was statistically significant. All right, so attitude is one indicator. A different indicator is what sort of impact did the students think the initiative had on them? And so here the questions focus on what impact has this mobile device had on your college experience overall, academic work specifically, social activities specifically, and entertainment specifically. And so here we have a sense of what happened in the fall and spring for both devices, iPhone and iPod touch users. So overall, I would say both the iPhone and the touch users said it had a positive impact on them. Both for academic work. Here, the biggest bang is on the social side, and you'll notice that the difference here is between the iPhone and the touch users. So clearly, this is a social device. The iPhone has more capabilities in that direction, and that seems to bear out in the impact that they thought it had. All right, academic impact specifically. So what impact has this mobile device had on your academic work? And then some specific questions on your collaboration with classmates, interaction with faculty, and what happens during class. So I think, overall, there's a positive trend there. The collaboration with classmates is an interesting one, and I think that reflects the capabilities of the device again. So you see that with the phone and the text messaging capabilities, they're seeing more of the academic potential than some of the touch users, perhaps. From a social impact perspective, this is where we see some of the larger differences. So what impact has this mobile device had on social activities, and then specifically relationships with friends and with parents? And so you do see some differences between the iPhone and the touch users. All right, the third indicator that I'll look at here is from a usage perspective. And so usage over time by device. So very high levels of usage, really for both devices, but for the iPhone, this is something that they don't part with. And the academic work and social activities, I'll talk more about academic work in just a minute, but there are two ways you could look at this data. You could say, they're only saying they're using this on average about once a week. Or you could say, well, how much would they have been using their previous phone for academic purposes? So, the previous phone they probably used for social activities pretty heavily. They might argue that they used it for entertainment purposes. But from an academic perspective, what would that number have started with? And so there are two ways to tell the story, and I'll let you form your own judgment on how you want to view that. All right, social usage specifically, how frequently did you use this mobile device for social activities this semester, socializing with friends, communicating with parents, and this is where we see some of the greatest differences between devices. Academic usage, some additional questions here. How frequently did you use this mobile device for academic work, collaborating with classmates, interacting with professors, carrying it to class? All right, so what is the picture overall? I would say the picture overall is the attitude is very positive to these mobile learning devices. They're excited about them. They perceive a positive impact on their experience. I would say the attitude, the impact, and the usage also varies by device, with iPhone users reporting a more favorable experience. And I would say that academic usage and impact are lower than social and entertainment. But we could hope that that this would be something that we would grow in over time. For year two, there's some opportunities to continue with this same direction, simplifying the survey design a little bit, and then looking a little bit more into this issue of device differences. Are we creating two classes of students? Are they having two very different experiences? And so if they are, what should we do about that? From a deployment standpoint, from an engagement standpoint, what should we do to bring all of our users into the initiative in an effective manner? All right, so Dr. Kyle Dixon will be with us next.
How are you? I'm not Bill Rankin. I've played him in a number of situations. So to get back at me, I think, for swapping out with his position, he's given me the monkey wrench, and so I'll leave you to kind of read in. I am often the wrench in the works, I think, in progress at ACU. Don't ask Kay Reeves whether she agrees with that. At the end of this kind of summary of first-year research, I wanted to kind of walk you through some of the things that were key and kind of important to the initiative in our first year. And what I'd describe maybe as the first-year platform. And then I'd hope to spend just a minute in looking a little bit ahead, just giving you an update. We talked about the first-year platform last year at EDUCAUSE, and so I don't really want to rehash what tools we're using. But I will just give you a glimpse of just a couple of these for those of you who weren't with us last year. And then I'll also direct you to a couple podcasts that we've produced since that point, since last October, and walking you through some of the tools that are both available to anyone who goes to m.acu.edu to look at the mobile portal, as well as some tools that are under the second tab. The second tab is the authenticated tab available behind our single sign-on to our students only. So let me try and move through this fairly quickly. What you're seeing right here would be the first of what we saw as the essential tools in creating a platform for learning in and out of the classroom. We wanted in this initial stage to, am I walking through this? I may be. We wanted in this initial stage to be able to provide whatever content available to our students when and where they were. And so we had just deployed a Xythos kind of document repository, providing class folders and drop boxes. And so on campus, our developers worked very hard back in 2008 to produce the interface that you just walked through fairly quickly there. And again, up in the upper left-hand corner at acu.edu/connected, I just direct you to podcasts that do this a little more slowly. So my apologies, this is kind of the flyby version. One of the second things that we wanted to emphasize in that first generation platform was we wanted to look at the interaction tools. What are the possibilities for interactions on the fly? The contention was, one of our developers kind of kept pressing us to make sure we were using mobile platforms in mobile ways. We weren't just recapitulating the desktop experience. And so these are called nano tools on campus. It stands for no advance notice. And it allows for the mobile tools within the classroom to kind of complement the improvisational kind of nature of teaching, to allow you on the moment when you realize you're losing your audience to intervene, to provide a quick poll, to get some feedback from them. And these provide Likert scale options. Multiple choice options. And then I think this is introducing you to the word cloud. Eventually, there you go. The word cloud is really the only of the only one of the two-part interactions where first I can poll my students, ask them for some multiple choice options. In this case, it was what were the defining moments of the 20th century, and then I can turn around and redeploy that and turn it into a visual representation of their feedback. We also looked off campus, and so this first year, the first year of the program was a really exciting time for interacting with other leaders in the mobile space. And I would just kind of direct you to one of the key pilots that we ran then in the spring of 2009, was with Turning Technologies and their new iPhone Clicker, which was allowing us in hybrid environments to be able to couple their existing response card technology with mobile phones. It's worked brilliantly for us. We're really fairly excited about the ways that Turning is helping kind of innovate in the space. And I'm not here kind of plugging them particularly as a company, but as a partner in that process. In that spring, we also ran two other pilots, and I want to mention the first and talk about the second. We spent a little bit of time working with faculty interested in podcast producer. So certainly there's media devices, and podcasting has continued to be a part at the kind of forefront of what we've been looking at on campus. I can talk about that a bit more with you after if you're interested, but podcast producer was one of those tools. The second one of the tools, we actually were able to use the mobile initiative to bring some faculty that were out innovating on the margins already. They were running kind of class blogs externally back into the conversation. And these are the very kinds of faculty you want in that conversation, those capable of kind of developing their own learning spaces, their own learning environments. And so what we ran last spring was ACU's first look at WordPress. Okay, blogs aren't new, but I'm here to suggest that mobility changes even the known pretty significantly. So whether we're talking about podcasting, whether we're talking about blogging, it's kind of a value-added platform. And so we've kind of spent some time then this semester in the summer. I guess this is the first of the tools, from what we learned last spring in that pilot, in that sandbox opportunity, to say we needed two things, I guess, as we interviewed those faculty. We needed the ability to deploy content quickly, and so the ability to kind of blog on the go that WordPress and others have been providing in your pocket. I don't know how many of you have got either microblogging or blogging that you carry with you wherever you go. And again, being able to add media, being able to add YouTube, being able to add whatever is on the device that I'm accessing that I can then immediately turn around and contribute to that blog. One of the innovations then we saw in that first semester of the pilot was post by email. Some of you know tools like Posterous. WordPress.com has actually recently introduced post by email as well. And to me, post by email, though it seems in many ways mundane, it's such a kind of a prevalent tool now, was the key. It was the kind of lowest common denominator we had on the phone for being able to get anything I'm looking at off. So how do we make these devices that can move beyond simple polling and interaction devices to actually be sharing and creation devices both within the classroom and external to the classroom? And so for us, post by email, though a very small kind of detail, provided us the ability to get that content shared immediately. I was teaching a satire class a couple weeks ago. We met over an entire weekend, and frequently there was the opportunity to say, please, in your groups, go out, find visual evidence, find demonstrations. I picked up my copy of The Onion on the street today. And be able to share that back to the class, aggregate that to the blog, and immediately their voice, not primarily my voice, their voice is contributing to this kind of new style of blogging. Again, I'm happy to talk to any of you that are kind of longtime WordPress users about some of the nuts and bolts of the instance. But let me just say, as I kind of wrap up my time, in this second year, we're in a completely different world. And this side of the App Store, this side of over 100,000 apps kind of making itself into that, making their way into that place, this side of working with WordPress, which has a massive development community, ACU has really continued to benefit, as many of you have, from, you know, this kind of anonymous collaboration with the web, where suddenly the best of breed tools are making their way to the top, and things, you know, like the leadership that you saw in many of the exhibit hall booths, where Pearson and Google and others are moving into the mobile space and really defining it as a platform. That's, I think, what we're excited about. It's not primarily about trying to make sure every one of our classes has a dozen apps that can be those learning objects that we develop on campus or that are developed out there in the space. But what are the platforms for communication and creation? And I think that's what we'll continue to kind of investigate going forward. Thank you.
Good morning. I am Scott Perkins, and one of my roles at ACU is to work at coordinating research in support of our mobile learning initiative. And so I'm going to talk with you a little bit this morning about a couple other projects that we've done, and then a little bit about what's going on in year two, particularly on the research endeavor. Before I begin, I need to commend you for being here on the last morning in the nearly last session. If you need reference letters back home for us to validate that you were here, let me know. I can do that. I've got business cards up front. Seriously, we're going to move through these slides pretty quickly. I have three different studies I want to tell you about. Dr. Crisp is one of our mobile learning fellows from year one, continuing his project into year two. I've got some results from another mobile learning fellow, a chemistry instructor, who did an experiment with her lab I want to tell you about, and then a survey of students in a large freshman class and a survey of faculty that was done in March of this year. And then after that, we'll move into just a couple slides at the end about some things that are going on, a summary of findings and some things that are going on in year two. So I'm going to move through with them quickly. Kyle referenced the m.acu.edu website. You'll see a reference to that, I think, on our Q&A slide at the very end. So you can go to our website, you can email me, pick up a business card up here and email me, and we'll be glad to get you some more detail about the slides that may fly by as we go along. George, did you mention the books already? Okay, and so those references are here as well, and there's probably four pages about research early in the document, and then another four or so pages with some tables and stuff at the back of the document. So some of the research things I'm talking about actually show up in the book that we've given you. So the first thing I want to talk about is a student survey. We had a particular concern. I want to point you back to the result Dr. Crisp was talking about, where academic use by students lags significantly behind social and entertainment use, as students self-reported. Again, no real surprise. The social use is a well-ingrained habit when they show up on our campus. The academic use is a non-habit, so to speak. They were going to high schools and having to turn devices off and hide the phones or they'd be taken away. So zero per day was the academic habit coming for most of the students. So in some ways, I think we can reframe that question and talk about the social and entertainment self-reported levels being goals that we wish to try to target, or targets that we shoot for with academic utilization. However, there's a problem, and the problem we experienced had to do with the saturation of devices within our classrooms. So here's the scenario. Let me tell you, on the slide you see some things, some demographics about the course I picked, the particular class I picked to assess this question. It's a large freshman class, 300 enrolled, required freshmen, et cetera. But the question had to do with saturation. So the last bullet, we need an accurate picture of how many of the students in this class actually have been given a device by us. The program was all full-time entering freshmen were given an iPhone or an iPod Touch. Yet, as you can see from the following table, that did not completely saturate this class. In fact, the numbers, 243 were there on the day I surveyed, 224 actually were freshmen full-time that we had given a device to. Another five of the sophomores and juniors had their own, interesting enough. But that still left us with about 8% of this large class that didn't have a device. You've sat through a presentation this morning with four faculty members. You're to be commended for that as well. And we have treated each other nicely and I think are relatively on time. So those are good things. Those are unusual for faculty. But here's another thing that you need to realize about faculty. If I'm teaching a class and 8% of my students don't have a required piece of technology, what am I going to do? I might be able for an individual activity to say partner up, go to this internet search together. But in general, I'm going to refrain from activities in the classroom that are technology dependent if all of my students don't have equal access to technology. So the saturation of our classes has been a significant issue, either due to juniors and sophomores and juniors that needed a better grade in the class, or students that were from other universities in town, or part-time students. We didn't have everybody covered with devices. This was a theme for us through the first year of our program. This was a frustration and obstacle for academic utilization. And we've addressed this, at least in part, in year two, by creating a pool of loaner iPod Touch devices that are signed out to students for a semester so that we can completely saturate specific classes in which we know the instructor plans to do significant work. Obviously, we don't have enough loaner devices to completely saturate all the classes we'd like to do. We'd like to be saturated across our whole campus, graduate students too, and all the faculty. But on the student side, that's not possible. In this survey, a little bit of self-report data from the students. This is a slide that represents some of their course evaluation kind of questions. So how hard are you working? What kind of grade do you expect? These are traditional things, and there's no real difference there to talk about. The difference, and I'll just leave this up for a second, as I mentioned, I see the same thing in this class that Dr. Crisp saw. The iPhone students are more positive about the program, more positive about their use than are the iPod Touch students. This is a significant finding replicated across also faculty, as I'll show you in a few minutes. So the students surveyed were very positive, very appreciative about using devices in class, having access to a number of the tools that Kyle mentioned, the course calendar, course documents, having the course text available, podcasts, class polls, and so on. Communication with professor and the TAs was particularly highly rated by both students and, as you'll see later, faculty. And we think this in part had to do with an attendance app, one of the nano tools that our folks wrote, that when I took attendance in class on my device and submitted, it immediately sent an email to students who were absent or tardy. And so I would get back emails that said, you must have missed me, or I came in late, or here's what I was doing. And the point is, those were all communications that weren't happening for me in a prior year because of the technology generating those emails from me to the students as a result of that. One of the issues that I think merits conversation for a moment here is a conversation we've had with our own administration. So if you think about what are the goals of the program, what things do we need to be measuring? Obviously, people are interested in learning, the quality of learning, mastering academic concepts, student performance, et cetera. And I don't mean to suggest that those are unimportant. Those are probably fundamentally important. However, we've been successful at pairing that conversation with the discussion of student engagement. Essentially, the argument goes like this. As a faculty member with lots of years teaching psychology and diagnosis of disorders, I think I know how to do that. And I think I can, through memorization and tests and hard work and sweat and torture maybe, I can make my students get good at recognizing what they see. What I don't necessarily need is technology to make my students learn better. In other words, better mastery. I think I know how to do that. What I need is technology that gives me more engaged students. They're happier about it, they spend more energy on it, they collaborate more, they communicate with me. So we have thus far been successfully arguing in as we talk around literally around the world about this initiative. We've been talking about student engagement as the fundamental platform on which to measure the success of this program. I really think that is where the rubber meets the road. More engaged students do learn better. There's research to demonstrate that. But student engagement, we know how to measure. In those seven dimensions, you see six of them here, those seven dimensions fit uniquely well with this platform for higher education and for education in general. So our students report, these are student engagement dimensions, improved attention, involvement, interest, active learning, contact with professors, overall class experience. They are reporting a better class experience as a result of the initiative. An earlier slide said that they're not telling us they're working harder, and they're not telling us that they're expecting a better grade necessarily, but they are more engaged, and that's a real success. We do see, here are the engagement pieces again, and we do see students reporting iPhone, iPod touch differences that we talked about before. Let me tell you about the chemistry study for just a moment. So Cynthia Powell, one of our instructors, teaches the first semester chemistry lab. So these are the pre-med students who are starting out, I guess, maybe one of the weed out kind of areas. Anyway, we run 100 or so, 100, 120 students through this course every semester. So she had five sections of this course in the fall of 2008. She took one section and limited enrollment in that section to students that had been given iPhones and iPod touches. So we have an iPhone, iPod touch section, four normal sections. And basically, she took all the classroom lectures, those that had to do with how to do the lab and those that had to do with safety protocols, and turned those into podcasts. Of course, the 12 to 20 minute lecture went to a 7 minute podcast. Conciseness is always a good thing. Maybe that's an additional kind of bump here. But she turns things into podcasts, has students watch the podcast ahead of time. Then they come into class and in their groups do the lab with the ability to reference back to the podcast as they need it along the way. Here's an outcome slide. We've got one I've skipped over that has all the demographics of the two groups. The important thing is that, at least for ability, we had ACT entering score averages for the groups of 26.2 and 26.3. So there are some major in gender and freshman versus more older students differences in the groups. Demographically, it's not all totally clean, but at least by rote ability it is. Anyway, these are the five dimensions that she had been using and continues to use to actually construct the laboratory course grade. And what you can see looking over the table is that we have no significant difference anywhere. Across one line, you know, across one column to the next, you see means that are very close to each other. It is true, I'm glad to point out, it is true that the iPhone, iPod touch section is slightly higher in every case, but before you get very excited about that, that's not significantly different here. Those are very close, and the error measurements are pretty large, so these are non-significant differences. I suppose 10 years later in 100 sections, maybe we'd have a different thing to say about that, but that's not really the point. The point here for our institution is that we have a really strong biology chemistry department area, and they're very successful at sending students on to graduate school and to study within professional programs. So we have near record rates of entry to medical school, for example. The point is, this is not a broken enterprise when she conducts this this study. This experiment is conducted in a platform where the learning of chemistry is going very well already. And what we see here is that we transition platforms, remove all the live in-classroom instruction by the professor, and lose absolutely nothing. There's nothing about student performance that is weaker on any of these dimensions with this transition. And before we leave this slide, let me just frame this a little bit larger for you to say we've got many, many hundreds of years of lecturing work, history, and attempt to polish off lecturing as a classroom teaching tool. So what can be done to lecture well, I think we largely know, have explored and studied. What can be done on this device in a classroom, we have no idea where the ceiling is. I don't know what's possible here. I know that her students, in addition to watching the podcast, also use this device as a flashlight and as a timer, and downloaded a periodic table element that they used in class, all stuff she didn't anticipate, because of course they're more creative and they know what to find and they can do this better than we can in a lot of cases. So we have a nearly topped out teaching platform, the traditional classroom lecture, versus a teaching platform literally for which we don't know what the ceiling is. Unlimited possibilities feels like an appropriate thing to say at this point. Okay, a couple minutes just about some things from our faculty. This is not the whole faculty of our institution. Half the faculty members had devices in the 2008-2009 year. And of that half, that's 160 so odd, we survey, we get 109 respondents. So 109 is a really great percentage out of 167. Two-thirds respond to a Zoomerang survey. That's an unseen number. We don't get that number very often. On the other hand, you are hearing from 109 out of 240 or so. So this is certainly a selected sample. I don't mean to say that there aren't some curmudgeons on our campus who refuse to participate. They're under on the 3% that George mentioned don't have a device yet, I suppose. But at least among the faculty, we see some really positive things. Phones over touches, 3-1. The green pie chart is kind of interesting. Two-thirds of our faculty are on at least their third page of apps, three-plus pages of apps. That means more than 32 apps. I guess the iPhone, the iPod Touch, comes with 12 to 16 default apps. So they've gone to the trouble to find and download another 16-plus apps, and that's pretty remarkable. We don't see faculty normally transitioning very fast or experimenting that fast, primarily because of things like this. And, of course, our statement at this point is we don't know what other population on the planet, certainly not middle schoolers in Uruguay, you can find with 12% of non-cell phone coverage. But on our campus, even among the faculty in our initiative who've responded to our survey, that's what they say. A couple slides about faculty reports about the students. They see students not necessarily as working harder, but they do see students clearly as having increased contact and participation and involvement are slightly up. Similarly, when we look about the at the faculty members' evaluation of the program, they don't say, the far to the right bar here, they don't say that they are using in every class. I would argue we didn't set them up to do that. We didn't have the classes saturated. The App Store wasn't even open in the fall of 2008 when we launched. We were using our own built a few tools. So the kind of things that are really exciting in classrooms, when I, as a psychology professor, find a behavioral observation app or a flashcard for DSM diagnosis, I use those discipline or course-specific applications to help my students learn about the things that we're teaching in that class. That's where the rubber really meets the road. A lot of that stuff wasn't in place, and we didn't have things saturated. So I understand that negative response. I want you to see, though, that if you look at the other side of this slide, we've got 87% of our faculty consider the program a success. Once again, as one of our many years ago presidents said, a faculty member is one who thinks otherwise. So faculty members don't agree, 87% of them, on anything. I think we could tell them they were getting a 10% raise, and it would go 8% say that's not enough, and 8% more say you're going to bankrupt the university in this difficult economic time. How irresponsible could that be? Lo and behold, we're only at 84% on my facetious example, and so on. Here's a faculty slide on the phones versus the touches, and guess what? The faculty members also say they've got the phones with them all the time, and that they are using more. It is, without going into it in much detail, it is essentially, potentially, some difference between a device that is a part of my identity and my social communication with other people and a device that is given for academic use and useful only when I'm within the Wi-Fi system. In fact, as some of our students have said, when I go to play intramurals, I don't take my iPod Touch. It might get stolen. Like, they think about it like their iPod. But they would be there with their iPhone everywhere because it's their phone. How else are they going to keep in touch with what people are doing after intramurals is over and so on? The phone's with them always. We see that even with our faculty. Really interesting kind of results. Well, our faculty are positive about the course applications too. As Kyle mentioned, the 87% number being comfortable using the device for a required course activity is another remarkable thing for us here, that faculty members are saying, I would trust, if we were deployed adequately, et cetera, I would trust a required course activity to this new technology in the first year of the program. That's a pretty great shift for us, too. So we've seen faculty members move more rapidly on this initiative and more in mass with more excitement and more innovation and, we might say, wild experimentation than I think, George, any other initiative we've seen across our campus. Pretty remarkable for us. Okay, a couple things just to wrap us up here. Major lessons, you can read down through the slide. The students and faculty are both excited. We think iPhones offer an advantage. You've got to have ubiquity. If the classes aren't saturated, then the faculty members just can't use and be fair to all the students. And please don't underestimate what it does to bandwidth. We estimate by rough count that if you do faculty and students and you do access points dropped on our campus, we're at like a 9-to-1 student-faculty-to-access-point ratio. Literally, less than 10 to 1 ratio, which we think has been a challenge. So what does mobility require? Lots of space for data, redesign of some activities. Again, you can read down through the list. I'll point you to the last point. There certainly are technologies. It might be landline phones in the dorms. Those aren't gone yet for us, but the computer labs in the dorms are gone, and that money's funneled now into this program. Most all of our students bring a computer to campus, and of course, for most of them, it's a laptop. So in year two, we have ongoing surveys going, doing a number of different things. We do have more mobile learning fellows appointed and at work on their projects this year. I want to mention and talk just a minute about the last point. We've invited several other institutions who we know are doing similar kinds of things to partner with us and to share research data. And so that collaborative partnership is essentially open and just getting off the ground. If that's interesting to you, make sure to either grab my card and email me or talk to me after. And I'll say another bit about that in a minute. Also, I want to point out that we are trying to set a challenge before the community here to argue that we need more sophisticated research. It's simply not enough to get student and faculty perceptions of and to get self-report about use. We need real use versus self-report data, and similarly, we need controlled experimental designs. So if you're interested in exploring, I want to point you to a consortium that we formed with a number of other schools, some in the UK and some in the US, but it's a consortium for innovation and research and converged learning. The web address, opencircle, without the E, .org, and that's up. It's on our hosted at our campus, and largely at the moment still has just mostly ACU information, but it'll be broader soon. We're ready for questions. So we have a few minutes for questions if you have some. Yes, ma'am. Uh-huh. Yes, there are some significant differences by gender, not a lot. The interesting thing, and this is only the statistics people, so there's probably one of you in the audience who will care about this. I looked for two-way interactions between device and gender. I was interested in phones versus touches, male versus female. And I found three questions where we had those differences. And on those questions, the women with phones were the happiest. These are students, not faculty. The women with touches were the least happy about those three items. I don't remember what the items were at the moment. And the men were in the middle. And my summary of that, obviously not tested, just maybe more in jest, is you give the guys something to play games on and they're happy and it doesn't matter what else it does. But if the girls can't use it for class to make academic progress and move forward, then they're really frustrated by it. So we've seen a few little gender differences, not a lot at this point. In the back. Of the iPhone contract? Okay, yeah, because we're giving the iPod touches at the university's cost to students and faculty. But if they choose a phone, then they have to enter in a contract with AT&T, and that is we have a discount of about 15% off a standard rate of nearly $100. So they're paying about $85 a month. It's $30 for data plus text plus some minutes plan. And it's an expensive piece to swallow. Obviously, that's a problem. And some of our colleagues now in the UK are in a much better situation where their students are able to be on a similar thing for probably less than $20 a month, unlimited text and unlimited data. It's a huge issue. We'd like all of our students to be on iPhones. We just can't make everybody swallow that cost. Do you want to answer that?
No, everything that we've done has been web-based, and as more and more of these devices support WebKit, then I think the Palm Pre Android devices will be able to use these tools. I don't think that we're going to be handing students these devices forever. At some point, we're going to say, they're just going to bring them on their own, and we won't need to. But at this point, the iPhone, when we started 2 years ago, the iPhone was light years ahead of anything that's available. I still think it's ahead of most things that are available because it's in its third generation. As we move forward, we'll probably open it up to more devices as we relax the restrictions about having, as we provide them and we go into different kinds of things. So It's a long way to answer the question, but the answer is no, we haven't specifically thought about it, but we are situated so that we can move easily because we're on a web-based platform at some point in the future.
So if I might comment just back on the same question, we've tried to stay mobile, but the growth of the App Store and the selection by individual faculty members of apps that they can use within their course and within their discipline is making that increasingly harder. So we're web portal based, we're trying to stay mobile, we could move to a different device. However, the App Store may grow this into a significant issue that at some point makes it much harder to be mobile. Let's do one more question, then we'll stay and answer anything else. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so the question is about how do people on financial aid able to have the devices covered under financial aid? And because it's a requirement at our institution, if you are a freshman or a sophomore, to have one of these devices, you could be able to put your plan under financial aid. A device is handed to you as a part of your tuition. It's just wrapped into the central part of how we do business at the university. But because it's a requirement, the students could opt into using that as a financial aid issue. I don't know any of them do that. I think most of them choose to pull that financial aid out for housing or something else, and it just all gets wrapped up.
Thank you so much for your time and attention. We appreciate your interest.